he was so good in Cuba. My expectation is that he will get to the majors in about 2 to 3 weeks, and he will be a top 10 third baseman for the rest of the season as soon as he gets here.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 98 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and as always, I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. Gentlemen, we took a break from playing Pokemon Go to record this tonight. Very excited to be here. How are you guys doing?
I'm pretty sure I found a Zanzibar in my bathroom.
Very nice.
I'm doing well, George, and I really have nothing to add to the Pokemon discussion.
True. I think the Mariners found themselves a wild Dan Vogelbach today, so... It's been a good day in baseball, I think. I'm very excited about that news. So,
it is very exciting. We should, it's very exciting. We should talk about that.
Hashtag unleash the Vogelbach. We're going to do a very cool segment in the second half of the show. We're going to talk about some second half sort of trade targets, players we generally like that we think fantasy owners should be going out and targeting. We're also going to start off with the expert fab, but first I want to do a little bit of housekeeping here. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. You can email us, flagsflyforever at baseballperspectives.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you use to listen to the podcast. We do have one event scheduled for August 27th. This is a cool one. It's at Miller Park out in Milwaukee. Mike, I believe you went to this one last year, correct?
Yeah, I went last year. I'm not going this year, just so our listeners are clear. But yes, the Milwaukee event is a lot of fun. I would definitely recommend getting there a little bit early if you can, just because there's a lot of fun activities, shall we say, outside of the park, and people watching during those fun activities is very entertaining.
Yeah, it's in the land of cheese, and I hear they have adult beverages at Miller Park as well.
So. Yeah, that's what I was referencing. There are a lot of adult beverages.
Should be a good time. It's Saturday, August 27th. I hope I've pumped this up sufficiently for you, but if you needed some extra incentive to go, people like Harry Pavlidis, J.P. Breen, Matt Trueblood, James Fisher, Grant Jones, so many more from the VP staff are going to be there. It's an awesome event. You should go. It's August 27th. Check out baseballperspectives.com for more information. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk expert fab. And we're back. It's that time once again. Everyone's favorite expert fab. We're going to start off with tout mixed. And I'm going to throw this over to Mike to sort of lead the discussion on this because he's got a full plate of topics for you guys this week. Mike, take it away. Let's get the show on the road.
Well, let's start with the mixed and let's run through this kind of quickly. So in labor mixed, there were all of three winning bids. And I want to talk more about the phenomenon than the bids because the highest bid was $4. The highest winning bid was $4. It was on Jim Johnson. You know, we know the deal with him. He might close in Atlanta. He might close for a while because Arodys Vizcaíno is out with an oblique injury. He's not very exciting, but he's a closer. But we experienced this last year, Brett, that there's the short week coming off the All-Star break. It's a three-day week. And last year, you know, we snagged a terrific player, you know, in our run last year, our winning run, you know, for $6 because people were asleep at the switch, and that was Kyle Schwarber. And this year, that player just really hasn't been out there. Like, not just this week, but for the most part, there just hasn't been that impact player coming via FAB and labor.
Yeah, it's been a very weak overall free agent pool, at least when it comes to young players that people get excited about compared to last year. I mean, I don't think we'll see another class of young players like last year for a long time. But yeah, it seems like everybody, especially on the pitching side, it seems like everyone's just been a disappointment that has come up. And this is more of, I think, what we should expect. I think we got a little bit spoiled. And I think this is kind of recalibrating us to back to normal a little bit.
Yeah, we'll probably see someone like Alex Bregman who will be up in, you know, I'd say a couple weeks. You know, he's playing left field now. They'll probably get the Astros will probably give him some reps there in the minors. But yeah, for the most part, maybe two or three minor leaguers will come up who will have some kind of impact, but you won't see the overall impact that we saw. So to kind of lead off in tout mix, the big bid there was Andrew Cashner. He went for 65. And just to let our listeners know, you know, as I said before, I'm just covering, or I covered tout mix this week in the column, which is Brett's league in tout, just because there were so few labor bids. So the big bid there was Andrew Cashner's. He didn't go to Brett. I think the play there is, you know, he's really struggled. He's had a poor year, even poorer than he's had, you know, the last couple of years. But I think the gamble there is on his upside and the hope that he can turn it around. What do you guys think? What are the odds, you know, change of scenery or no? What are the odds that Andrew Cashner puts up some numbers this year that are playable in, you know, a deep mix league?
I am done with, I've been done with Andrew Cashner for about 2 years now. And there's no reason to buy back in. The stuff isn't as good as it was when he first came up, and he's never been able to translate it into good performance for any extended period of time. I think, I'm not optimistic about him being mixed league worthy this year or ever again.
It just doesn't strike out enough people to be relevant when your margin for error is that thin overall as a pitcher, and you factor in the injuries as well. So just not someone I'm remotely targeting at this point.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. You know, he's somebody who, you know, for me, he's NL only, and even then he's kind of more of a mid or back end option. I'd say in deep mix that at best he's a streamer. And, you know, part of the problem there is San Diego the last year and a half has not played like the pitcher's park that it used to play like. So, yeah, I think we're all in agreement. Cashner's okay in spots, perhaps, as a spot start, but not somebody you should rely on. He went for 65, and out of a $1,000 budget, you know, I think that's fine. But anything beyond that is really a stretch with him. Is there anyone else on the mix side that you guys want to talk about? You know, I alluded to Jim Johnson. You know, I think we know the deal with him, and we also know the deal saves in a fantasy league where you have to chase them even if they're not necessarily attached to a good arm. I think we can talk if we talk about Ryan Healy, we can talk about him on the AL side. Brett, you made some buys this week in Tout Mixed, and they were some low end buys in terms of the cost, but I really like the players that you picked up. Do you want to talk about them a little bit?
Sure. So I picked up one hitter and one pitcher this week. I picked up JJ Hardy for $8, and you know he's been swinging the bat pretty well lately. I owned him. I picked him up off of waivers, I think, in mid-April, and used him a little bit before he got hurt. Stashed him on the DL, and then he lost his roster spot in a little bit of a crunch about 3 weeks back. So jumping back on the train. I had an extra spot in the lineup this week because Lorenzo Cain hasn't come back from injury yet, and Aaron Hill was traded to Boston, so I decided to keep him reserved and put Hardy in. So it's I take that back. I played Aaron Hill. Someone else must have got it. I'm forgetting. But yeah, Aaron Hill's still in my lineup. The thing about Hardy is that he plays, and he plays in a good ballpark and a good lineup, and he's never going to be someone you want to roster in shallow mixed leagues unless he's on one of his super hot streaks. But in a league like this where I just kind of need him to be first guy off the bench most of the time, and might not even be that once Chris Owings comes back, he's a really good fit, especially for not a ton of fab. The other guy I picked up is much more exciting, although not really from a fantasy standpoint. It's Edwin Diaz of the Seattle Mariners. Dude is just literally striking everybody out. He has it's really just ridiculous. He has 42 strikeouts after being after another perfect inning today. As we're recording this, so this is Wednesday. Today's Wednesday, and he debuted in the majors in June, literally in June. So in a month and a half, about he has 42 strikeouts. That is a Brad Ligian pace as far as relievers and strikeouts go. So even though he is not going to register a save, he might put himself into position for a win here or there, but I need some strikeouts, and on weeks with poor pitching matchups, like this week, I have a couple of starters facing the Blue Jays on the road in Sashi Wakuma and James Paxton. So I sat both of them and threw Diaz in, who I think matchups don't really matter with Diaz. His stuff is just electric.
Plus, he can go multiple innings.
Yeah. So that now makes, between Hardy and Diaz, that now makes five players I've added to my roster in the last 5 days. And if you include the trade that I made, that's seven new players. So I have a lot of new faces on the roster.
What was the trade?
A lot of
hugs. The trade was I dealt Billy Hamilton and Tyler Skaggs to Tim Heaney of USA Today for Danny Salazar and Craig Kimbrell. So now I just have to keep my fingers crossed that Kimbrell misses closer to 3 weeks than 6 weeks, and I can make up a little bit of saves. But I have Alex Bregman and Yulieski Gurriel on my bench ready to go as soon as they hit the majors, and Kimbrell and Jordan Zimmermann on the DL ready to jump back into action. So I have a little bit of reinforcements coming. It's a tight battle. I'm not sure whether it's going to be enough, but I'll at least give it a run.
Well, at least you're in it. You know, that's really the big thing at this point in the year in an expert league. You can be in a position like I am in Tout, where, you know, I'm barring a miracle, I'm not going to win. So being in it at this point is pretty good.
Can we talk about Sandy Leon for a minute?
Sure.
Because he got picked up for $5 and only one other bid was above a dollar. I just don't think anybody's giving him any semblance of respect. He only has, I think it's, what, 70 plate appearances on the year, but he's hitting 431 and slugging 662 coming in tonight, and he had another triple this evening. So two home runs. I mean, at some point, he's going to come back to earth, but it's pretty incredible what he's doing and giving the dystopian wasteland that is the catching position in fantasy. Sandy Leon, no one seems to care about, but the numbers are off the charts right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good, and you know, we all know, you know, we know he's not going to hit, you know, 400 or whatever ridiculous blistering pace that he's at. You know, it's funny, there's another guy on the mixed list, Peter Burgos, who went through or is going through a similar hot streak where we know these guys aren't that good. We know they're going to come down to earth. But in Leon's case, and particularly because he's a catcher, that plays in, I'd say, any two-catcher mixed league, even a 12-team mix with two catchers. I know it's rare, but you have to start players like this behind the dish when they're hitting. It's that simple.
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough to have two catchers that I'm not looking to replace, which has not certainly been the case all year for me. But yeah, Leon is a guy who I certainly would have put a bid on if it was more of a need.
Yeah, well, it's one of those funny things. What winds up happening in a number of these leagues is teams that have healthy catchers don't look at a guy like that, and it's typically a team that has a dead spot due to an injury that just picks up someone like that. Like, well, whatever, he's playing 3 or 4 days a week, I need something, and they kind of wind up lucking into that, as opposed to, you know, looking at Sandy Leon and going, oh yeah, he's great, I have to have him. So there's some element of that there. So should we move to the AL, or is there anyone else here that you guys want to discuss? I think we did a pretty good job with the mixed.
Yeah, I think we can go to the AL.
So the big buy last week is the Fab runs on Sunday is Drew Pomeranz. You know, as we're discussing this, it, you know, did not have a good night tonight. He looked good for two innings, and then the third, the wheels came off. Maybe it was the fourth. But I wanted to talk a little bit less about Drew Pomeranz and a little bit more about the bid mechanics on a player like Pomeranz at this time of year. So every year, or almost every year, it happens. You know, the waiver trade deadline, it's usually July 31st. This year it's August 1st because Major League Baseball decided to move it to Monday and I have it on a Sunday. But there's usually a player, Pomeranz, who we know he's not necessarily going to be the best player coming over, but he has enough talent, you know, in an only league where he certainly should be bid on. I wanted to get some impressions from the two of you, because I know you like me, play in at least one only league. What's your strategy with a player when he comes over and, you know, he's the guy who you're like, okay, I've got at least a week or maybe 2 weeks of stats versus all the players are going to come over? Is it dependent on where your team is in the standings? Is it dependent on categories? Do you just try to be aggressive regardless? Like, what's your plan, a player like Pomeranz?
Well, what it is and what it has to be is it has to be completely player dependent. You can't. The one thing that I don't do, and you know, maybe I go a little too far the other way, is seeing as though I tend to get very itchy when it comes to Fab, especially in an only. It's slightly different, but even in an only, if you're sitting there waiting for the guy to come over, more often than not, you're going to be disappointed in the end. So with Pomeranz, you know, if you like Pomeranz, then there's no reason not to go heavy on him. It doesn't matter whether who you think is coming over, whether there's a chance that Julio Teheran comes over, or really anyone else. I don't know who, maybe there's people I'm not thinking of, but there's not going to be a bastion of pitching being traded from the from the National League to the American League. You've Rich Hill, who might go from the American League to the National League. But this is really all we're talking about. The problem with Pomeranz is that he is still somewhat of an unknown, which is why I think, Mike, you noticed this in your Fab write-up, and why I think it's it probably holds true in most of our home leagues and most of our listeners' home leagues, is that the teams that went big on Pomeranz were probably the teams not right at the top of the standings. Teams that had a little bit of fab and are still within shouting range are probably more likely to gamble on Pomeranz and take that risk, seeing as though it's a riskier profile. Yeah, we saw that. I mean, he was not very good today, and I don't make really very much of one start. I think Pomeranz will still be fine enough, but you see it, and it's not just a Drew Pomeranz thing. We see this in previous years too, when there are guys that are guys that come over a week or two before the deadline, and they have some warts, they have their lack of track record or whatever it might be. If you are in the lead or very close to the lead, I think there's a hesitancy to use fab on someone who you're not overly confident about. And while that is fair, and you should be confident about people who you invest that kind of fab in, waiting for waiting's sake is usually a pretty bad idea. George, what do you think? Did you watch his start today?
As I had myself on mute, I've had to discuss Drew Pomeranz with people I didn't even know follow baseball within the last couple of days. I've had to talk about Anderson Espinosa. I'm a Pomeranz out. I get it. He added the cutter. The curveball is great. He had faced the Giants twice previously this season. So remember, he was in San Diego, obviously. So this is a lineup that knew him well. So I think that caught up to him tonight, and he wasn't getting a ton of swing and misses. It wasn't a great first impression, and Boston's a town that can pile on you from a negativity standpoint. So I think there's the expectation that he's going to come in here and be really good from a lot of the fans, and that was what was sold at the time of the trade. Yes, they're giving up this great prospect, but the narrative is they're getting a good pitcher who's on the rise. I have my doubts, but at the same time, Pomeranz to me feels like a guy who has made so much progress, I'd be surprised to see him give it all back just because he changed scenery here. We've talked a lot. One of the prevalent themes of this show has always been the adjustment going from the National League to the American League and vice versa. I think there will be a little bit of that. Pomeranz pitched in Oakland before, so it's not like he's never faced the American League, but it's never been as a starter, really. So there are some concerns here, and I don't know if he's the type of guy you break the bank to go out and get, but certainly if you're in contention and you still have the fab to be able to do it, especially in an only league, this is a guy who is guaranteed to get starts the rest of the way because of that the rest of that rotation. I mean, they're not going to start Clay Buchholz, and who knows if Eduardo Rodriguez is coming back, and there's a whole mess there. So Pomeranz is the guy, and I think he's going to be okay. I wouldn't expect him to replicate what he did in the first half, but I wouldn't at the same time expect him to be as bad as he was tonight. I think that was just a product of having faced the Giants a couple of times, and they sort of knew what to do facing him.
Yeah, you guys hit on all the points that I thought I'd have to fill the gaps in with. So yeah, that's what I'd say I feel about him. And particularly with you, Brett, it's dependent on your station and pitching, and if you're in a position you have to pursue that and market it, great. But to me, the most important takeaway we say is not necessarily to wait for the big guy to come in, because even though something obvious, it doesn't necessarily happen. So I think we're going to just segue to our next segment, because there were a couple of buys in the NL, but Jake Barrett kind of, you know, is what he is. He's saved speculation. You should definitely read Matt Collins' The Closer Report. He talks about people like Barrett every week and does a good job at it. And the other big buy was Ronaldo Lopez, who pitched yesterday as we're talking. And another BP, the call-up on him, which pretty much covered him, I think, in all the detail that you need. So I'm going to throw it, I guess, to George, and we're going to move to our second segment tonight.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mike. And while we were talking, Sandy Leon had a home run. So go pick up Sandy Leon. I don't know what else to say at this point. Dude's raking. So our second topic we wanted to do tonight, we wanted to take a look at some second half targets, guys who fantasy owners should be targeting, guys who we sort of like that have caught our eye. We're not perfect. We're not clairvoyant. We don't know the future. We try our best to analyze the situation and make a call. So that's what we're going to kind of do with this, is take a look at some of the guys that we like going forward that we think fantasy owners should be considering either picking up if they're still out there in leagues or should be targeting in trades. So I guess who wants to start off?
So we're looking for players who we think are going to be targets, I guess, the rest of the season, or somebody who has a bounce back in him.
Yeah, that's pretty much the idea. Yep.
I'm trying to think of he seems kind of obvious, and I can't even believe I'm saying this because, a few years ago that this wouldn't have been thought of, but I'm going to start. I really have to believe that he's not going to, the rest of the year be a 245 hitter. I do think that the steals are gone, and or that the steals are marginal at this point. So if you bought into him thinking he was a 20 steal guy or going to go back to 2020, that's not going to happen. However, it does seem likely to me that you're looking at more of a bump, and that bump has already kind of happened. If you go back to right before the All-Star break, and the break has kind of muted this a little bit, he had an 0-for-8 day in that 18-inning game against Washington, which also has made his recent stats look a little bit worse. But he's really been hitting, and the home runs haven't necessarily come with those hits yet for the most part, but I think they will. I can see McCutchen rest of the season about 300, 310 with some decent power. I don't know how much of a buy low he is for the most part, because most people are going to look at him and kind of know these things. But I wouldn't be afraid to trade of a top tier, or I'd say maybe someone next year down McCutchen. If somebody's down on him and looking at current stats, thinking, well, McCutchen isn't the player he was, there's already been some progress, and I expect that progress to continue.
I hope for the sake of my tout team that you are right, Mike. Every box score I check and every at bat I watch, I get, I know it can turn around, but I feel less good about it turning around. It has to, right? I mean, it has to. This is the conversation I have with myself almost every day.
Well, but the thing is I think for the most part it kind of has a little bit, and I know you can't do this. It's always a fool's errand to say, if you take out one game, a player's better. We kind of see that's like, well, yeah, and this is particularly true for pitchers, where if you take out one outing, anybody looks better or worse. But that 0-for-8 in that crazy 18-inning game, it really did have an impact on what he's done. And I think it makes him kind of, and again, I'll be careful about this because, he's Andrew McCutchen. He's not anybody who's going to be, sneak through anybody's radar. But even with that 0-for-8, 269 over his last 23 plate appearances. Again, the power hasn't really been up. Two home runs. That's the one place where I'm a little bit nervous with this bet is the power. I see the average coming back, and it kind of already has. I just think there's too much talent here, unless he's hiding an injury, which in this day and age is hard to do, to not think that the next couple months are going to be. For your sake, I hope I'm right too.
I appreciate that, Mike. The person who I was going to bring up is it's going to seem a little after the fact, since he's had some hell of a game tonight. But I want to talk about Hanley Ramirez for a little bit. We Hanley is not a surprise to anyone at this point. He's not the elite fantasy player he used to be. He doesn't particularly run anymore. He doesn't really hit for a whole ton of average anymore, although he's someone who will still help in the category. When looking at a stretch like this in the season, trying to predict who will do well over a 2 month or 2.5 month stretch, unless you are making a bet on someone like Mike Trout, who is pretty much good in every 2 or 2.5 month stretch, it's really a crapshoot, and you're juggling the amount of a crapshoot it is with the amount of the upside that a player has. And where that point sort of coalesces for me is with Hanley Ramirez. He's someone who has disappointed the person who's rostering him enough that he's probably reasonably available, and he still has the upside to go on a tear and almost carry a team, not really in the way that he used to, but in the way that he did at the very beginning of last year, in the way that he did in spurts in LA. With the average and the power, I think there is still a chance for a really, really good contribution down the stretch. And he's got 3 home runs in the game tonight. That's going to obviously change the equation slightly, just because that's what happens when you hit 3 home runs in a game. But he is someone who I would definitely have a feeler out for if you need an extra bat in the outfield.
I'd agree with that. Hanley looks a little bit better nowadays. My guy's going to be Addison Russell, just because he's someone I've paid attention to in a lot of formats. And speaking of struggling out of the gate, I mean, he hit 214 in April with 2 home runs, no steals. I mean, he really got off to a slow start this year, and there was a ton of hype in the preseason. I think everybody expected coming out of spring, he had a strong spring training, and I think everybody thought, he was going to ascend to that next sort of class and join, the Lindors and Seegers and Bogarts and Correa, and maybe if he didn't join them, he'd be on that next sort of tier right there behind those types of guys, and it just didn't happen, frankly, to start the season. And I've been really impressed with what he's done over the last maybe month or two. He's hitting now .239, which isn't great, but .329 on base percentage. He's slugging .401. He's got 11 home runs, 2 steals. By true average, he has a .275 true average this season, which, if you compare it to last year, is actually better than the numbers he put up last year, and he's also hitting for more power. And he's only 22 years old right now. That's the crazy thing to remember about Russell, is that he's someone who's still developing and still getting used to facing major league pitching. So this goes back to, we had this discussion before the podcast off the air, but in planning a piece we're going to be doing at BP, where we look at second half sort of targets and guys who we like. And last year I picked Jung Ho Kang because he was a guy who had stumbled out of the gate, then was showing some really great signs and some market improvement at the plate. And I see that sort of happening here with Russell, where I don't think people, because of how bad he started off the year and how he failed to sort of live up to those expectations at the beginning of the year that we maybe had for him as a potential breakout kind of guy, I think now he's starting to really hit, taking notice as much as maybe they should. And I mean, shortstop's been loaded this year. If you look at the top of that position, it's really been great. But I think Russell's a guy who could really make an impact for fantasy owners, and I don't think it would take a lot to pry him away in a redraft league and as part of a bigger deal. Mike?
I want to move to a pitcher, and he's somebody who, this is a deeper league pick, and he really struggled at the end of the second half, but Aaron Nola. Nola's, he started the year really well, and then, all of a sudden, like, just seemingly out of nowhere, the wheels came off completely. I think some of that with him was the usual, kind of adjustment by the league, but also first full season, even though as has been pointed out, Nola's not really somebody, you know, because he's a college pitcher who, you know, didn't have or had an experience or had severe innings limits. If you look at numbers, a lot of his issues, you know, we kind of try to avoid at this point, you know, overemphasizing BABIP and overemphasizing bad luck. But a lot of his issues really tied to his strikeout rate remained pretty high during his slump. His walk rate looks pretty stellar. Balls really weren't flying out of the park on Nola. And for our, you know, out of the break, he looked terrific. And, you know, be careful with him. I don't think you want to rely on Nola too much in a shallow mix. But everywhere else, he's the kind of pitcher where I wouldn't be afraid to try to acquire him or look to get him coming down the stretch. There might be an innings, might be a bit of a limit with him in September. But beyond that, there's no reason not to buy into that last start and believe that he can't bounce back.
That innings cap also helps drive down the trade asking price too.
That's a really good point. Yes,
Brett.
The guy I want to talk about next is someone who is even less expensive to acquire than Hanley Ramirez and quite significantly. But I want to talk about Ryan Zimmerman for a second. Zimmerman has not had a good season, and he is hurt. And this is going to make him very easily attainable in most leagues. But Zimmerman has actually been deceivingly good while he's been healthy this year. He's played in 74 games. He has 12 home runs, so he's on sort of that, you know, that 25-ish home run pace that he's generally been on in the last. You know, the last 5-6 years or so. But the interesting thing about Zimmerman is that his BABIP and his batting average don't line up with his batted ball velocity. He's been making really good contact all year, and it just hasn't been showing up in his stats. He's hitting .221, .284, .402. That's good for a .686 OPS. He's still in a really strong lineup in a spot that is when healthy, he should be behind Dan Murphy and Bryce Harper in that lineup and should have plenty of room for RBI opportunities. I think that he is someone who if you need to take a little bit more of a risk and don't want to give up what it would take to get sort of a high-end corner infielder. He's someone who I would take a shot on who could perform like a borderline top 10 first baseman the rest of the way for very cheap. Or he could get hurt again. That's the thing about Ryan Zimmerman, and that's why he's pretty cheap. So, an interesting name to throw out there. George?
Yeah. I'd like to do a million. I could do this all night with you guys, but we're only going to do, I think, three each. So my second guy is Max Kepler. He's someone who I don't think he's gotten huge buzz industry-wide yet. I could be wrong, but every week I write the free agent column at BP along with JJ Jansen's, and every week we marvel at how low the ownership numbers are with Max Kepler, because it doesn't make sense when you juxtapose that with the talent that he has. He's 23 years old. He was the MVP of the AA Southern League last year. There's huge upside here with this kind of guy, and we knew as a prospect what he was sort of capable of, the ceiling was. He seemed to be just limited by injuries and struggled for a long time, but really put it all together last year, and I don't think people really realize how good he is. So far this year, just looking at his numbers, the batting average is pretty low at this point, but he has a .243 BABIP, which seems insanely low. He's hitting for a ton of power, though. He's got 10 home runs in 185 plate appearances. That's a .245 ISO, which is just insane. So Kepler, I think, Brett, you made the comp that he was sort of the ceiling on him is Eric Hosmer without field eligibility. And I don't think that's far off base. I mean, he sort of has a similar type of approach where he has good power, the swing is great, and it's easy power. He really can drive the ball with that left-handed swing. So I wasn't as excited about Max Kepler as maybe I should have been coming into the year, and I've changed my opinion just a ton. I've really been impressed with him over the last month or so, and I just don't understand why he's not getting more attention from fantasy owners. Maybe it's just because home runs have spiked all across the league, but his numbers at 23 years old are really impressive. They jump off the page at you right now, the amount of power he's hitting for. I don't think it's a fluke. Mike, back to you.
I feel bad because I'm going to steal one of Brett's favorite players here, and I've made fun of Brett for promoting for. But Jurickson,
not Edwin Jackson.
Nope, Jurickson Profar.
Yay!
With Prince Fielder possibly out for the year, I see an opportunity for Profar. Now, of late, and this is where I see the buying opportunity. Profar, he appears to be a part-time player. He hasn't played every day, so the overall numbers don't look impressive, particularly the power numbers. But I've watched Profar enough, and Brett, I must apologize for not believing you on him. He's just a really impressive player. And you don't get this opportunity often to pick up or trade for a player who, again, part-timer, numbers haven't been impressive, Rangers haven't really seemed to know what to do with him. Regardless of whether they play him at first or whether they play him, you know, somewhere else or rotate him around, it doesn't sound like Rangers are going to be pushing for a hitter. Just because they have some other needs and just because options in the minors, regardless of how it works out, I see Profar getting time, and even if the power doesn't come right, he's a player from what I've seen who at the beginning when he was called up, regular at-bats, and if he gets those, I think he'll do the same.
It makes me feel good, Mike. You know how much I like Jurickson Profar.
And now I like him too.
Yeah, as you should. So I'm going to go in a slightly different direction for the last guy. And, I'm going to talk about Rajai Davis. Davis is having a fantastic season. He is getting a ton of playing time. He has 24 steals, he even has 9 home runs. And that, as weird as that is, that's certainly not sustainable. But with it looking more and more like Michael Brantley is not going to contribute meaningfully in Cleveland this year, Davis makes for an interesting trade target because there's sort of, you know, there's been sort of this implied sort of time bomb in his value that, you know, when Brantley comes back, they're going to, especially with Talonaken playing the way that he's been playing, you know, he's going to go back to being the fourth outfielder. He's going to play a couple times a week and steal a couple bases, and that's going go back to being the, you know, Raj Davis, who's the, you know, acceptable fifth outfielder in a, you know, medium to deeper mixed leagues. That said, if he does continue to play 4 or 5 days a week, as he has been, you know, he is going to continue to put up numbers. He's generally leading off against left-handed pitching, and he's hitting usually seventh against right-handed pitching. So he's in good spots to add runs and RBI. He's going to steal bases. We know this. He's not going to be super helpful in batting average. Although I think he can stick in the 260 range and possibly bump up to the 270 range. You know, it's not really a buy high because I don't think that really exists. But there is sort of a chance to arbitrage his value. He's been a top 50 overall player this year, and my guess is that you could probably trade a if an owner is particularly concerned about future playing time, I think you could probably trade a top 200 player for him, and I think that would properly factor in the risk of losing playing time and give you a really strong speed based outfielder for the rest of the year.
Good call. You've long been driving the Rajay Davis train this year, it feels like. You were one of the first guys I saw anywhere picking him up and getting excited about it, so good work there. I guess I could talk about Carlos Santana having basically the best season of his career, but I'd rather use my time to ask each of you a question. It's current news sort of related. I'll go to you first, Mike, and my questions are going to be, we didn't talk about Yulieski Gurriel. I don't know if, did he get picked up in any of the expert leagues yet, or how does that process work for that?
He was picked up in, well, Brett picked him up in Tout Mixed.
I own him.
Yeah. And Brett picked up before he was signed, which worked out really well. He was picked up in each of the Tout-only leagues. And the funny thing was Phil Hertz of Baseball HQ bid, it wasn't much, I think it was like 14 of the 1,000. He bid more on him than in the AL, where I think it was Glenn Colton and Rick Wolf bid two, which is going to look super because, you know, even if he's up in mid-August, that's still, you know, 6 weeks of stats for virtually nothing. So he was picked up in the only leagues I'd say 2 to 4 weeks before he was actually signed, and maybe even a little bit longer, just because in the leagues there's nothing and people tend to stash players early.
Yeah, so from all the reporting I've seen, Gurriel's going to need, he's 32 years old, by the way, in case you didn't know. He's going to need approximately 50 to 60 at-bats in the minor leagues, so that's maybe 2-3 weeks. What are your, Brett, since you own him, I guess, what are your expectations for him? Because it looks like he's going to play third base. Bregman's going to split time there at third and DH and left. I don't know. They're going to find a way to get both of these guys in the lineup down the stretch. But what are your sort of expectations for Gurriel, at least for the remainder of this season, and how should fantasy owners be valuing him in terms of FAB and those types of investments or a trade?
I am, you know, in the long run, it's yet to be seen whether he really is sort of on the downslide of his career, which my guess is he probably is, but he was so good in Cuba. My expectation is that he will get to the majors in about 2 to 3 weeks, and he will be a top 10 third baseman for the rest of the season as soon as he gets here. I think there will be a little bit of rust on his side, but I think pitchers won't really know how to pitch to him, and he'll be able to take advantage of the park in Houston, and he'll be hitting in a really good lineup there once he's there and once Bregman's there. I think it could be a really exciting player to own for the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think he has the potential. I wrote about him for the TDX transactions, which unfortunately he wasn't able to get picked up, but I thought it was worth talking about him because you're right, he could have a huge impact. And there isn't a guy with his type of talent out there on the waiver wire in most leagues. So I think if he's still for some reason available, you should definitely go pick him up. And last guy I want to talk about, and I guess I'll throw it to Mike first from the FAB standpoint on this guy, but we kind of touched on it earlier, I think, but Dan Vogelbach, I actually want to have a serious conversation about him because if Seattle is going to call him up, which they said they're willing to call him up at any time, how much of an investment, Mike, could you see yourself making in an AL-only league? Because Vogelbach can hit. That's the one thing we know he can do. There are huge holes in his game everywhere else, but we know he can hit.
I'd say in an only, I'd probably be willing to put 20 to 30 remaining budget down, depending on what, you know, my team's needs are. Because I agree, he can hit, and regardless of all his comings, he's in the American League now, and when he's up, he's going to be up to DH. And the average, I don't know how well that's going to translate, but the power will translate, and he will he will perform for the Mariners, and he will put up numbers that I think you'll be pretty happy with. And even a deep mixed league, I don't know, you know, where we'll fall out on him when he comes up in labor, Brett, and late, so we can't bid on him this week, but he'll be an interesting decision when that time comes.
He will be an interesting decision, and I would advocate a heavy bid on him. You know, the one thing that I think goes a little unnoticed these days, and I know we can be, we as a fantasy community and as a baseball watching community can be a little slow to react to changes in ballpark dynamics. But for left-handed hitters, Safeco is actually playing above average for home runs in the last year. So it's not necessarily, it's 1 year of park factors. It's not a huge sample size, but people think Safeco and they think, oh, there's a power hitter going to Safeco. I am going to be sad about it. I would not rush to that judgment here. You have guys like, you know, Robinson Cano has 22 home runs this year. Adam Lind has 17 or 18 now. I don't have their home road splits in front of me, but you know, the way the park is playing, this is not a terrible assignment for him. It's not a terrible trade for him. I think it's a really strong positive for his fantasy value in both the near term and the long term. And George, I know you're on a similar wavelength to me on this, but Vogelbach, I think next to Alex Bregman, is the best hitter in the minor leagues right now, the best pure hitter. And yes, Vogelbach doesn't have a position, and yeah, if you put him at first base, it's passable, but it's like Prince Fielder passable. But he's worked hard to get to Prince Fielder passable, which is to his credit. The bat,
it's amazing he's gotten to this point at all. Like, people thought he wasn't going to make it at all.
It is the bat is just really, really good. You know, go ahead, Mike.
I have a point and a question. I just want to add to your point, Brett, which is Nelson Cruz. We kind of made this mistake when he moved to Seattle, because he'd been in Texas, he'd been in Baltimore, and we were like, you know, he's going to lose 10 points. And power plays, like, if you have that kind of power, unless you're in, you know, a graveyard of a park from like the 50s, power plays. And Vogelbach has that kind of power, will play anywhere. And I think we saw it with Chris Davis this year. When Chris Davis went to Oakland, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, he won't hit for power, it'll drop off, you know, and his power, you know, the average isn't there, but the power itself plays. The question I had, and George and I were talking about this before the podcast. So right now, Brett, in a hypothetical, you know, just we're talking about Vogelbach's defense. If you had to choose for the Mets between James Loney or Vogelbach, just right now, like for the next few weeks, who would you take?
It's not even close. I'd absolutely take Vogelbach. Loney
is his defense worse than Loney's?
His defense is much worse than Loney's, but I forget who I saw said it, but it is absolutely correct. I mean, I think it might have been Jarrett Seidler who was talking about it, but Loney is the definition of barely replacement level. You know exactly what you're getting. He is something that will keep you from an absolute black hole. He is not good. Vogelbach could be good. And yes, I think first base defense in general is overrated, and I would not have any issue throwing him out there.
Yeah, Loney's played over his head, and he's barely been above replacement. So yeah, that pretty much is the James Loney story. Yeah, we were talking about it before the podcast, and we were kind of quite amused because, you know, as bad as Loney's defense is, Vogelbach's is worse, and it's just the whole Mets thing. Like, I agree with you, Brett. I would prefer to go with the upside of Vogelbach if I were the Mets and had the opportunity. But given the rest of that infield defense, it would be kind of funny to watch.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So I guess my case for Vogelbach, I mean, Brett made the great point that I was going to bring up myself, is that the park factors in Seattle, they're great for left-hand batters. And Vogelbach hits the ball to all fields, but he's got pull power to right field, and it's not going to matter what park he was in ultimately. He's going to hit for a ton of power. So my point, I guess, overall is if you're listening to this podcast and you read Baseball Prospectus, you believe in the numbers. And this is what we keep saying about Vogelbach's the best hitter not in the major leagues right now. And it's true to a certain degree. I mean, if you look at by true average among AAA batters, Vogelbach's number one, 356 true average. I mean, you can't fake that type of production. So I think it's time to get excited about him. He's not a guy who's going to get a ton of hype or anything like that, and I feel like we're the people who are doing it, so I hope we're right, because he's so much fun. Anybody else you guys want to talk about in terms of second half guys, or are we good? I think we touched on a lot of good names there, though, this discussion.
I think we're more or less good. Any other names? Any other names you guys want to throw out there?
No, I'm good. I we'll probably hit on, you know, more of this next week, particularly as we get closer to the real major league trade deadline and more hot stove comes up.
Yep, that's gonna be fun. So we're gonna take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 98 of Flags Fly Forever. We're almost to 100, guys. That's pretty fun. We're going to have to bring Mao back for the reunion for the 100th episode. That would be fun. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the rest of the BP Fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com over the remainder of the season. Sign up for a super premium membership. Get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question. You'll get a response within usually 12 hours, oftentimes much faster than that. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I'm at George Bissell. You can email us, flagsflyforeverbaseballprospectus.com. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. For Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show next week, good night, everybody.